Achtung, es folgt eine wichtige Botschaft Ihres Mobilfunkanbieters.
Ey Mann, es gibt Leute, die drücken immer noch zu viel Knitter ab.
Nein, nicht frisch.
Lebara ist ja irgendwie smarter.
Ja, smart.
50 Gigabyte für nur 8,99.
Wenig Knete.
Ich zahle doch nicht mehr für weniger.
Nee, das wäre auch schön blöd.
Lebara,
deine Knete, deine Entscheidung.
Nice.
Alle Details zu unseren Tarifen finden Sie unter lebara.de.
Stu does America.
Subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit the bell for notifications. Get Stu Does America merch at StuDoesMerch.com. Code is Stu10. Get 10% off your entire order. Christian Toto is here to explain what went wrong with Disney's Snow White abomination. Prosecutors have made a major decision in the United Healthcare CEO murder case. We'll get to the latest there. But we're going to start by doing the trashing of the Trash Museum. The Trash Museum. It's not exactly about recycling. It's sort of about recycling. It's kind of a trashy recycling museum. And it brings us to the world of environmentalism. I hope eventually all this stuff is just seen in a museum, but we're here now. Rainstorms are getting more intense amid climate change, is the report from Axios. And I'm fascinated by this because I thought our issue was drought that we were concerned about, but now we're also concerned about rain. So it causes rain and drought. It's just that easy. And by the way, it also seems to cause rain and also less rain. So just more rain and less rain. Here's the chart they give you. The most increase was Wichita, Kansas at 38.4%. This is rainfall intensity, not total rainfall, but rainfall intensity. So when it rains, it's raining 38% more in Wichita, but then 37% less in Fort Myers. So just move in between them and everything's perfect. That's the lesson you need to learn. Look, I would love a freaking museum for climate change because all I would put in it are like the statements made about global cooling from the 1970s and all the bad predictions made. That's a museum I would go to. We might start one right here. Can I get an extra wing of the Mercury One Museum to just put in all sorts of statements from annoying environmentalists that got stuff wrong? That's what I would like to go see. Luckily, though, we don't have that museum yet. I don't think you want me curating a museum. However, I will say we used to have an environmental museum. It was wonderful until Lee Zeldin got in control. Oh, my gosh, this administration. Can you believe it? They're once again getting rid of important projects like the multimillion-dollar Biden EPA Museum. Now, did you know that we had a multimillion-dollar Biden environmental museum? Well, you do now. Unfortunately, you can't go because it's closed. Let me give you a little Back to the Future flux capacitor trip. Back to last year, all the way back in 2024. How old were you in 2024? EPA opens a National Environmental Museum and Education Center. Big achievement for Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. The museum features historical and scientific artifacts. I wonder if they have the global cooling quotes. My guess is no. Along with interactive displays that highlight environmental history events and EPA milestones. Isn't that wonderful? If you think if they're going to do something like this, maybe they could at least make it entertaining. I don't know how, but probably not. The thing is, of course, whenever a government does anything, they fail at it over and over again. And you say, come on, every single thing they fail at? The answer to that one is yes. Let me show you the former EPA director attempting to do the ribbon cutting at this museum.
10, 9, 8.
Big countdown.
7, 6,
this should be pretty easy,
5,
right, Mike?
4.
He's looking
3,
at it.
2.
Here it comes. One attempt, nothing. Two, three. Three attempts to cut the ribbon at the stupid museum. And look, I think we all knew this was going to be a catastrophe when it started. But let me give you a little tour because you're not going to be able to go now. The evil Lee Zeldin has closed this museum. So let me give you a little tour of this museum. Here's the interior. And you have this room. And remember what this room looks like because there's a key detail to this room that I think you'll see is quite important here in just a couple of minutes. But there's the interior. You got all the, I mean, basically, it is a super cheap looking museum. It's kind of colorful, I guess, but it's got a bunch of pictures of like water and trees on the walls. And it's got a bunch of exhibits that, you know, say like, oh, widespread air pollution. That's what our country had. Then you have this next area, which is like a little seating area around three tiny monitors where you can sit down and watch videos that likely repeat over and over again. My understanding, too, is that they're using energy here, which, of course, is killing the planet. But that's that. Then you have this wonderful view. You get the nice chandelier above the sitting area. It looks pretty fancy. Costs some cash, I would say. And are you noticing, though, that that tree in the background is kind of the same tree we were just looking at? That kind of tree on the... That's the same tree. It's the same seating area. It's the same chandelier from the other pictures. Oh, well. Then we go to this next one. They're bragging here about their successes. It's hard to read because for some reason they put it at blue letterings on like a mostly white and blue black background. It's kind of hard to actually read. But it says, as of 2023, after more than 50 years of the EPA, 92% of community drinking water systems are hitting health standards. Is that good? I'm sorry. What number were we expecting? 90. So 8% of the richest nation that has ever existed in human history doesn't have water up to healthy proportions, and we're bragging about that as the EPA? Really? I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe instead of this gigantic agency, we could send a bunch of Brita water filters around town. I don't know. I'm just throwing that one out there. Just send them out in the mail. I mean, that we can use the one government agency that actually is allowed for in the Constitution with the post office and just deliver Brita to these people once a month. We probably save a lot of money. Then you have this one, which is interesting. Again, I look closely at this photo. Again, we have the same, you know, these like little display boards. One of them says widespread air pollution, and behind it is that same tree again. Well, like the same forest over and over and over again. You also do have this biohazard situation, which is kind of fun. Hey, this is what bad environments look like: an oil can and a hazard suit. But I'm kind of interested in that old tree. Why is there that? Why do we have all those pictures of the? That's it. That's the whole tour of the museum. Why did we recognize so many things in multiple photos of that museum? Well, Lee Zeldin wrote an op-ed about this. Lee Zeldin, why we're shutting down Biden's EPA museum. And he says the following. The latest efficiency I have identified is the closure of the Biden administration's scarcely visited Environmental Protection Agency museum. The cost of this museum, a whopping $4 million, of course paid for by you, to build in accordance with Smithsonian standards, and more than $600,000 annually to operate. And you say, okay, well, look, you know, that's a lot. And I think there's a fundamental question as to whether the government should be involved in, you know, putting museums together like this to entertain and educate people. I don't know if that's really their role. I would say no. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been, like, Dallas has a lot of this. A lot of very wealthy people like making museums. They build them all the time, and they put their names on them, and there's fancy stuff going on inside. Usually it could be really interesting, to maybe entertaining to kids, or they have a miserable field trip, one of the two. But that stuff happens all the time. This is not a hard thing for societies to do, is make museums. So I don't know. Do your tax dollars really need to be going to museums? I kind of argue no, frankly, on that one. Maybe take some donations, see if you can build your museums. But $600,000 is not a lot of money in government standards, but a lot of money coming from everyday people to go to a museum. But maybe, look, maybe lots of kids are going. Maybe it's like a really great museum, and people are really loving looking at that one tree, that still shot of the one tree, or maybe the three tiny, like 23-inch monitors that they could watch stuff on from a seating area. I mean, maybe they just really loved it. Maybe not. The museum itself is about the size of an apartment, barely 1,600 square feet, tucked inside the ground floor of EPA headquarters in Washington, D.C. It had less than 2,000 external visitors between May 2024 and February 2025. You know, that's like 9 months, 2,000 visitors in 9 months. To put that in perspective, even the lowest visited Smithsonian Museum has 8 times the visitors in 1 year. So we're spending $600,000 a year. We spent $4 million to build a one-room apartment. Now, remember when I was complaining about seeing the same tree over and over again? The reason why is because that's like the only thing in the museum. There's a tree, there's a couple poster boards, there's two or three mini TV monitors, and a hazmat suit. That's the whole thing. We spent $4 million on it. How? Hey, by the way, it's located in a building they already own. How did they spend $4 million on this thing? And how could it possibly cost $600,000 to operate? I mean, honestly, just leave the door open and anyone who wants to come can just walk in and do whatever they want. That would be a better use of the space. Millions of dollars spent to build this one-room, little-trafficked, so-called museum inside EPA with hundreds of thousands of dollars in operational costs annually is yet another example of waste by the Biden administration that could have been spent on providing clean air, land, and water to forgotten communities. EPA staff amounted to more than 40% of visitors. I want to highlight that stat again. The staff of the EPA was 40% of the visitors to the museum. That is a real thing. 40% came from the building they were in. And they came back down. They said, oh, wow, look at that. This sucks. And then they left too. The cost of taxpayers per external visitor amounted to nearly $315 per person. Per person. $315 per person. $123,000 on cleaning and landscaping, $207,000 for security guards, $54,000 on a magnometer and X-ray maintenance, more than $54,000 on storage, so they didn't even bother putting all the crap they had in the one-room museum, and nearly $40,000 for maintenance AV equipment. The museum exemplifies a broader pattern we've uncovered, resources being diverted from the agency's core mission to fund initiatives that advance partisan ideologies under the guise of environmental stewardship. Now, if you go to visit the website, maybe you want to get some tickets. Maybe you like that one tree. And you're like, I got to see that tree again. This is incredible. Unfortunately, when you go to the website, you get this. I'm sorry, this webpage does not exist. They've already closed it down. So you missed your chance. I know it's very, very sad. It's a one-room museum. Okay, that's important to remember. I mean, we could, in theory, set up several EPA museums in my house. I have several rooms in my house. Move them right in. I mean, people are like, oh, gosh, when my kid moves out of the room, out of the house, I'm going to Airbnb it or maybe rent out the room. Don't do that. Build a museum and make $600,000. That's the way you should use your empty space. It's incredible. It's important, though, to note, because, you know, Lee Zeldin correctly hits this a little bit, but more focuses on the waste of the matter. And the waste is really, really important, right? Even though it's not a huge number for government standards, it's a total waste of money. There are hundreds, thousands of these types of things that I hope Doge is really locking down on, because there's a lot of this stuff that they can get rid of without any problems at all before they get to any controversial cuts. But it's not just waste. It's narrative building. This is what these things are used for. Building a narrative of the EPA as this heroic agency, like the Super Friends, where they're going to come in and solve all of your economic troubles. There was actually a cartoon, wasn't there? There was an Super Friends cartoon long time ago that we covered on my old show, Wonderful World of Stew, which was a lot of fun. I had to bring that one back. That was a lot of fun. So you might say, like, well, who cares? Like, yes, they wasted some money. The narrative building, though, I mean, no one goes to the museum, so how could the narratives be built? And that is, I will say, a fair point. But this is how these things get out of control, right? Biden didn't launch this at the beginning of his term. He didn't do it to he wasn't super, super proud of the idea, I don't think. It was about planting a seed. It was about getting this thing open in some way or another. So they scam everybody out of it. They get it through a budget somehow. $4 million goes to build it, $600,000 a year to maintain it. And what usually happens is these things just go forward and they go on and on and on and on. And you know what? Donald Trump's in office right now, of course. Normally what happens is the next president who comes into office, the next Democrat that comes in, increases it. Maybe their first budget, maybe their first bill has an increase of 50%. And then another one. By the end, they're out of office, all of a sudden that thing's four times bigger. We're spending four times as much. There's even four times more space, four times more trees on paper. Little tiny monitors, four times as many. And then the next president gets in, and all of a sudden, this is a $200 million budget, and we are inviting kids from all over the country to come to the environmental, the EPA museum. It's got celebrity voices for all their videos, and it's got all these grandiose experiments you can do, and it can showing you all this wonderful technology, and scientists are there to show you all these incredible things, and blah, 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 blah. Education, if it will, if you can believe it. And what happens, right? You have all the a generation down the road. This is like a big part of the curriculum, right? And they use the public education system to manipulate people, to grow these budgets. And eventually, 20 years from now, I'm on here doing a show and I'm playing clips of some crying woman who is who's lost her job at the EPA museum because evil Republican president cut the budget by 1%. And it becomes this big controversy, and then the Republican goes, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. We're going to keep that funding for that museum. That's too controversial. And that's how it's gone forever. To Trump's credit, he is doing something about that. And it is really crucial, and this is why I'm really excited about what Lee Zeldin is doing here, is you have to cut the roots early on these things. It's the same thing that happened with Obamacare. There was a chance to get rid of Obamacare. That chance was probably, you know, a year or two after it was passed. And honestly, probably our last chance was 2012. Not because of reality. Obviously, we could get rid of it anytime we want, anytime we had a president with a spine who wanted to do it. Now, Trump does not a priority of Trump. He does have a spine, but it's not a priority of his. He doesn't seem to really emphasize that all that much. But we did have a chance back in 2012 with that election. That was probably the last one. There was a chance, you know, people talk about McCain kind of stepping in the last second to overturn that skinny reform, which probably wouldn't have killed it anyway. But the bottom line is now that it's an entitlement, it's almost impossible to get rid of. You have to have the right person to do it. Now, Trump actually does seem like the right person to do this if it winds up being on his radar at any given point. It just doesn't seem like that's the thing he cares about most. But he did care about this, and he got rid of this thing before it grew into some monstrosity that all of us are paying for the next 50 years. Thank God this stuff is happening. Now, Doge, look, there's some criticisms of it. Some of them seem to be, somewhat, they've made a few mistakes. Elon Musk has even talked about it. He said, look, if we find mistakes, we're going to change the website and show you when we make mistakes. We'll make sure we re-implement funding where we think it's important. That's all happened. But this stuff is also happening. It's not being controlled, covered by the media. And if it is covered, it's covered as like this horrible thing. The one person who actually went to the museum sobbing on the sidewalk saying, oh my God, I don't get to see that tree anymore. That is the reality of the situation. So we have to draw attention to these things when they're really, really smart and successful. And this is something that's happening. I think this is happening throughout Doge a lot. We don't know all the details. We're not getting all of this. So it's important when we see these, and if you see these, if you see examples of this type of stuff being cleaned up by Doge or other agencies, send them in. Send them to us on Twitter, at Studos America. I love to cover these. I cover these things every single day. I freaking love it. I want you to know about all the dumb things our government spends money on, and now that they're going away, I want you to know about that, too. Well, it's April Fool's Day, and you know, you're gonna see the typical garbage on social media. You get the fake product launches, you get the dumb internet stunts, you got someone trying to convince you that they're quitting social media forever. Please. Now, I will tell you, when you get that message from me, no, it's true. But what's not a joke is trying to buy or sell a home right now. It's not fun, I will say. It's one of the most complicated, stressful, financially intense things you'll ever do. And if you don't go in there with the right help, you're just asking to get burned. You do not want some part-time agent who's doing this to fund their essential oil hobby. You want someone who really knows what they're doing. And you want the best. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com connects you with the best-selling agents in your town, in your area, who live and breathe real estate. These are the professionals who know how to price it, stage it, market it, negotiate it, and close it. No nonsense, no side gigs, just results. And if you're thinking about buying or selling, go check them out right now. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. This is a free service to you. So check it out. realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mildwürzig, je 150 Gramm Packung nur 3,49 Euro. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 Euro. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
I'm joined now by Christian Todo. He's a film critic, Blaze contributor, and host of the Hollywood in Todo podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Christian, thanks for coming on the program. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
I want to talk to you a little bit about Snow White, because a fascinating development. This has not worked at all. I don't know if it shocks anyone else. You think with something like the IP of Snow White, this should be easy, right? Easy money maker. I mean, I have kids. Really, anything Disney would release in this genre would be successful. At least it seemed like that for a long time. This has been a catastrophe, though.
Yeah, I think the making of, the rollout, the bad buzz behind the film is actually more entertaining than the film itself. Yeah, this should have been a slam dunk. This is a classic property. You have generations of moviegoers who love the original film. You maybe have parents and grandparents who want to introduce it to their kids. And everything went wrong. I mean, all that Disney did was step on rake after rake after rake, from the star Rachel Zegler to the behind-the-scenes chaos to insisting that we can't have little people in this film, and then changing gears when that was mocked into the stratosphere on social media. I mean, I can't imagine a film with a less enticing rollout. And, you know, by the time it hit theaters, people didn't want to see it. And then the second weekend, the box office really fell off the cliff. So even if there was sort of word of mouth hope, that's gone too.
Yeah, I mean, the dwarf thing I thought was really offensive. I mean, if there was a movie role for like an overweight white guy, I would be really upset if I wasn't considered for it, right? Like, that's unfair. Jason Statham, who is, by the way, not an overweight white guy, he has a movie out called A Working Man. And I feel like Jason Statham releases a new one of these types of movies every 6 months. Like, they're usually kind of fun and entertaining. I wouldn't say they're, you know, necessarily award-winning, some of them. Although I do consider Transporter 2 to be an all-time classic. That being said, a Jason Statham movie is not supposed to be week two of Snow White. That's not supposed to be the way this works.
No, but it's exactly what happened over the weekend. You know, Statham is an interesting guy because his movies aren't always blockbusters. They're not making hundreds of millions of dollars, but they're reliable, they're predictable in a very kind of, you know, comfort food way. And he knows his brand. He knows his audience. He knows what to deliver time in and time out. And, you know, he's in his mid-50s now. It's just shocking. He looks younger. He acts like a much younger man. And he just delivers the goods. And, you know, I was thinking more about Jason Statham and his career arc and what he's been doing. And I don't know who he voted for in the last election. I think he's British, but, you know, he may have weighed in on the matter. I don't know what he thinks about the U.S. border. I have no clue. He just is a movie star. He seems to know what his brand is, what his appeal is. He doesn't derivate from it that much. And I actually, as a critic, would like him to dig a little deeper, maybe into these characters. But as it is, he's just a good action star. He never phones it in. He's always committed. And for all those reasons, he's a commodity that we know what to expect and we enjoy it. And it's more appealing right now than Snow White.
I feel like that's what we want. That's really all we want. I don't necessarily need to have, I mean, I appreciate some of the conservative movies that have come out. They're great. I'm glad there's an effort being made, especially in the faith space, to make movies that don't completely suck. That's been kind of nice lately. But like, generally speaking, I'm okay just going to a movie and escaping and not getting my politics fed to me. And it seems like the movie itself, I don't know if you wind up seeing it or reviewed it, but from what I understand, it's not even the movie itself that is super woke. There's not tons of politics in the movie. It's just Ziegler herself and then some of the surrounding stuff, along with the fact that the movie maybe isn't that great a movie.
You know, just to kind of clarify, Snow White is woke in that it has kind of reconfigured the story to make her more of a leader, a heroine. She's really the focus here. Matter of fact, there's a love story here, but, you know, spoiler alert, it's there, but they're almost afraid to dig into it. So that's, you know, I enjoy the film more than a lot of my peers. Honestly, there are things to commend that I recommend about it, but you can't escape that. I mean, you had this classic tale. They said, oh, no. Even though this has been successful for generations, we're going to change it. They got it wrong the last time. We have to kind of fix it. And that's a fascinating and certainly a flawed way to go about it. But I have to say, you know, when you look at the movie, it's almost at war with itself. You've got a prince-like figure. He's no longer a prince, though. But you can't really focus too heavily on their connection because then she wouldn't be empowered. So you have a faint here, a faint there. But by the end of the day, it's all about Snow White. So it's the old, if it ain't broke, you know, why would you fix it? They tried to fix it, and it made it worse.
It made it much, much worse. Now, as you point out, the movie had a terrible, terrible rollout. And a lot of this had to go with Rachel Zegler's public comments, where she was saying a lot of the things that you said, like, gosh, that old movie was really awful, and all the things that happened in it were bad. The guy was a stalker. All these things that make people say, well, wait a minute, we love that story. It's not only saying something bad about the movie, you're saying something about the person, right? Like, if I love that movie and you're saying it's a bad message, you're calling me bad. That's not the way you want to message a movie to your audience.
It's fascinating to me that all these stars, they work really hard, not just on the movies, but on the publicity tours. They're talking to Colbert, they're talking to, you know, magazine interviewers, they're on social media, they're on the red carpet. It seems pretty simple, positive, upbeat. We worked really hard in this movie. I hope you like it. Yeah, there's some changes here or there, but we think it's a new story for a new generation. We love the old film. I think this just adds another wrinkle. You may enjoy it, that kind of a thing. I don't know how hard that is, but apparently it's almost impossible for some actors. You see star after star either get super political and divisive or just do what Rachel Zegler did. I mean, and, you know, after all the hullabaloo of her initial comments, and there were quite a few comments she made along the way, then she targeted Trump and more specifically Trump voters after the election. Listen, I know you didn't like him. I know you didn't vote for him. But you understand you're an artist, you're an actor, you're part of this huge team. And by doing that, you're basically saying to half the country, yeah, we don't want you at the theater. You can stay away. Because we have so many options now to watch and to enjoy at home or at the other, you know, portions of the Cineplex. So it just boggles the mind that she would go there. And, you know, she's about 23. She's a young actress. I get that. But she's not 12. I mean, she should understand how these things work.
Yeah. I mean, if you care about the business and you're and making your movie successful, you don't want to just eliminate half your audience. That seems like a really basic step to take. Can you, because you watch this Hollywood stuff really closely. I had a friend who worked for one of the studios a while ago, and we were talking about movies. This is years ago. And I was saying, oh, well, that movie made this much money and it's more than it costs. So I guess it's profitable. He's like, no, that's not how this works at all. You have to understand that there is a massive gap between how much the reported number is and what makes it profitable. Can you kind of walk through people the economics of all this?
Yeah, I mean, there is the budget of the film, which is often exorbitant. There is the marketing and advertising, which can be quite expensive as well. And then because the movie gets tickets sold, all that money doesn't go to the studio. They often split it with the different theater chains and things like that. So you have to almost double what the budget is at times. So it's different for every case, and there are different factors. But generally speaking, when a movie like Snow White comes along, if it costs $300 million, if it made $300 million in a dollar, they didn't make a dollar profit. You've got to make much more than that to make a profit. So that's where it gets complicated. And it's really the biggest problem in Hollywood. They're spending too much money. The new Mission Impossible comes out in a few weeks. It's the budget is exorbitant. Even if it's very successful, the chances of it actually making a profit are very slim. That's a huge mistake. That's just setting yourself up for failure. Hollywood's got to figure out a way to make these movies in a more streamlined fashion, cut costs. And my recommendation always is talk to independent filmmakers. They always make do with less. They somehow make the film. They get it done. They have lots of obstacles. They understand they've got to cut corners. They've got to improvise. If a big studio do that and maybe cut the price in half, they'd make more money. But they don't seem to get that. I don't understand.
Yeah, and they have gotten it occasionally. I mean, Blumhouse is a great example of this. Like, they've made all these movies. They've made them, you know, they're movies that people, generally speaking, really like.
Yes.
And they've made tons and tons of money off of them. And they've given the director kind of control of the art of it, right? Like, they're not, like, super involved in micromanaging every little piece of it, to my understanding. That's a great approach and can, you know, I think they're like locked into this thing where, well, people can just stream stuff at home. So we got to make it more spectacular, put more money into effects. And that formula is not working out. I was reading your piece on Mission Impossible to back up your point here. It has a $400 million budget for this, which is a part two of a series. Like, it's like a two-parter movie release, which I didn't see part one. So, I mean, I'd have to do that first if I was going to go see part two. The highest any of these movies have made is $791 million, which maybe breaks this movie even. It would have to do better than any movie in the entire series, which is asking a lot.
And you're talking about Tom Cruise, our last big movie star. You're talking about a beloved franchise. The trailers look great. There's no reason why this shouldn't be a wonderful success story for the studio, but it's not for those reasons. It's really insane. And I think you're right. There is this sort of blockbuster mentality, bigger, faster, bolder, more special effects. And the running times of these films, I mean, I look back at the films of my youth. It's like, you know, Alien was like 2 hours. Raiders of the Lost Ark, around 2 hours. These movies go well past 2.5 hours sometimes. We don't need it that long. It's just nothing makes sense here. It's amazing. And there have been a few films in recent years that have looked beautiful and big and just expansive. And they made it for less. The Creator from a couple of years ago, Godzilla Minus One, allegedly was made for $15 million. It looks like a Hollywood movie with all the razzle dazzle. This can be done, But there's some sort of groupthink that goes on here where they're not crunching the numbers where they should, and they're just going to keep losing money. It's just not a good plan.
Do you think, Christian, that they're going to? I mean, how much do they dive into the AI world here to save cash? Can they do this with? I mean, I know everyone in Hollywood is really resistant to it, but it's hard to believe they're not going to at least kind of try to use it to save a lot of money on all these effects and everything. Maybe not the whole movie, but scenes, yeah. And you know, it just seems like that is coming our way.
As Thanos said, it seems inevitable. I don't know how they can avoid it for too long. I understand the human element. I have a lot of ambivalent feelings about AI, as do we all. But, you know, at some point, they've got to use the tools that are out there. And I think maybe indie films or maybe even upstart filmmakers may use that, may fall back on that and say, hey, we're not Disney or Warner Brothers, but I need to use these tools at our disposal to get our film out there. So it'll be pretty interesting to see how that moves forward. But, yeah, they've got to do something. It's inexplicable how they've proceeded at this point. And again, you have all these budgetary problems, you have all these issues, and then you have the stars just putting their feet in their mouth consistently. And I think this Rachel Zegler issue has been so prominent and so publicized, even in the press, which would love to cover up for her mistakes. I think some actors may finally get the lesson and say, hey, we got to be positive. There's a new movie, a Minecraft movie coming out very soon. And Jack Black and Jason Momoa have been saying, hey, we need a movie like this. It's sweet. It's uplifting. It's friendly. Let's bring everyone together. Maybe that's pablum. It's the right idea. It's not going to push anyone away. And it might kind of coax some people to check it out.
Yeah. Jack Black's fun and funny, too. Right. Like he's I think he's. Again, his politics or whatever his politics are, I don't care. But he seems to bring that energy to every project he's in, you know, so that's a positive. Do you have a couple more minutes here? I know we're running a little bit late, Christian. OK, so let me hear you, because you mentioned going through the way these actors are going. I think you're right. I think this particular piece of evidence with Rachel Zegler is so in your face. I think actors might, yeah, at least for a while, understand this. Though I was surprised to see, was it John Boyega from Star Wars? Come out and say, basically, Star Wars fans are racists. They don't like it, yeah, when black actors or black heroes are in the movies. They, you know, if they're side characters, it's one thing, but they don't want to see them be the hero. Now, I love Star Wars coming up. I'm maybe the only person who actually really liked The Force Awakens. I thought that was a really good episode of Star Wars. You did too? Okay. I feel like me and my daughter are the only ones who like that movie. I thought he was really good in it. Like, you know, the next two, maybe not so much as far as the movies, but never in my mind did it even cross my mind for a second that they were like, oh gosh, I don't want someone, why would they put a black person in that role? It never crosses their mind. And then we find out later that, like, the people that we're going to support in these movies basically hate our guts and are accusing us of the worst things that you could accuse people of in humanity, racism and all these other, misogyny and all these other things. It's so frustrating. What do you make of it?
Well, I agree with everything you said. I will give a caveat, though. He's playing the victim. Rachel Zegler was playing the victim at times. A lot of actors play the victim. When Jennifer Lawrence complains that she's not making as much money as her co-stars, she only made maybe $8 million as opposed to $12 million. You know, cry me a river. Listen, I get the disparity. I don't discount it. But you have to understand where audiences are coming from. But the Hollywood culture right now is about victimhood, first and foremost. Mm. So even if you're a powerful actor, John Boyega is a very talented actor. I have no problem with that. He'll have a nice career moving forward. He's had a nice career so far. But that isn't enough for him. He's got to kind of play a certain role. And by saying that, you know, Star Wars fans and kind of insinuating they're racist, he's casting himself in that fashion. It's absurd on the face. Do I have to trot out the Lando? I mean, I grew up with these movies. There's not a person I've met in my entire life who doesn't love Lando Calrissian, a.k.a. Billy Dee Williams. I mean, he was a part of that original saga, a critical part, a fun part, a scoundrel at times. We never, ever thought of anything about his skin color or his race. And, you know, of course, Samuel L. Jackson was Mace Windu in the prequels. We didn't care. We love Samuel L. Jackson. It's just a dumb thing to say. And the real problem with the movies, as you hinted at, were the people who made the second and third films in that particular trilogy, because they stunk, okay? And they bungled the characters. I was thinking that there was going to be his character was going to fall in love with Rey in the saga. They seemed like they were going in that direction. They might fight, they might quibble, but then they fall in love. And I'd be completely happy to see it, yeah, as would everyone else. Instead, they just went in this crazy off direction. The films just collapsed. The trilogy just didn't live up to expectations. And that's where we are. That's where he should be mad, not the fans. We wanted to love him and his character. It's so poorly thought out. It really is.
It really is. Last one for you here, Christian. The Ziegler thing is really fascinating. And, afterwards you had this massive failure. The director's dealing with all of this too. Maybe it's partially his fault, but like not entirely. Certainly Rachel Ziegler has this issue. So after the failure, you get sort of the typical Hollywood, PR fight where, Ziegler starts allegedly leaking things about how she was confronted. They came and talked to her and they said, you're not allowed to say what you believe and all this stuff. The story comes out. People start commenting online and criticizing the director. The director's son gets fired up on Instagram and decides to address these things. Let me just read this to you real quick. He says, my dad, the producer of an enormous piece of Disney IP with hundreds of millions of dollars on the line, had to leave his family to fly across the country to reprimand his 20-year-old employee for dragging her personal politics into the middle of promoting the movie for which she signed a multi-million dollar contract to get paid to do publicity for. This is called adult responsibility and accountability, and her actions clearly hurt the film's box office. He says free speech does not mean you're not allowed to say, or you are allowed to say whatever you want in your private employment without repercussions. Tens of thousands of people worked on that film. She hijacked the conversation for her own immature desires at the risk of all the colleagues and blue collar crew workers who depend on that movie to be successful. Narcissism is not something to be coddled or encouraged. And reading that, I had such a reaction to it because, like, first of all, as a dad, I would be so proud of my kid for stepping up and defending me like that and so thankful to him. I'd also be, don't make it any worse, son. I love you, but you don't need to do that. But this is quite clearly the right sentiment. This is actually what happened with the movie, and he's being destroyed for it.
Listen, she has her supporters and there's sort of a Israel-Palestine issue going on because she's been all free Palestine for quite some time. But everything he said is completely spot on. It was spoken eloquently. I think he may have taken it down because he might have gotten some heat for it. But he's absolutely right. Listen, we don't want to go back to the old days where the studios would control everything the actor said and did. That's wrong. It's not good. It's not going to come back. It shouldn't come back. But you have to use some common sense. And like that person said, think of the bigger picture here. There are so many people whose lives were dependent on this movie's success, who really kind of give the old blood, sweat, and tears to make it a reality, who work behind the scenes. And she's just kind of, dumping on them in a way with her comments. It's just not the right approach. And like I mentioned before, Tom Cruise is the last movie star in part because all he does now, and I think he learned his lesson too, is say, I love making this film. Thank you so much for making my dreams come true. I think you're going to have a great time in the theater. Come check it out. I don't think we need much more than that.
Yeah, it works. You're supposed to be an actor. I want to believe you as this character. I don't need to believe you as this, left-wing pro-Hamas activist. That's not what I need. Christian Toto, thanks so much, man. As a film critic, Blaze contributor, and host of Hollywood and Toto, the podcast, make sure to check that out and read stuff on the Blaze as well. Christian, really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Well, we've got more Tesla vandalization. Is that the word? More Tesla vandals are going on right now with another Cybertruck. This is the video of it. And this is, I don't know, this one I'm a little bit, I don't know if this is just regular Tesla vandalism or that this guy particularly knew this guy because he's coming into a cul-de-sac going way down to this guy's driveway, as you're seeing here, describing on the podcast. The guy's walking around and slashing tires. And then you'll see at the very end him throw something off the windshield, maybe a rock or something. Coming up, and you'll see it right there. Yeah, he's like smashing something against the car. So anyway, I don't know. You do that just to find a Cybertruck, or you have like a specific victim in mind if you're doing all of that work. But again, cameras are everywhere. They're on the Cybertruck. Now, I think there's a mode, Sentry mode, that you have to turn on for it to be recording all the time. So maybe he didn't have it on. We don't have close-up video. And yes, we know there are masks and everything else, but the chances of you getting caught with this stuff are really high. And what are you achieving? I mean, nothing. It's so absolutely stupid. In Wisconsin, we have the big election tonight. Elon Musk has been working very hard to try to get the conservative Supreme Court justice across the finish line. And odds aren't great on this one, I will be honest with you. It seems like this is going to go the Democrats' way. We can hope for a miracle, though tonight certainly a lot of resources have been spent, and maybe this is something that can happen. But these types of elections don't often go the way of the party in power. These like smaller special elections, they usually go worse for the party than the big elections, because everyone's focused on those big elections. And then you get these one little off election and people aren't really paying attention to it. Elon Musk did everything he could to try to get people to do it. What to watch in Wisconsin and also Florida as they hold the first major elections of Trump's second term. The other ones in Florida are the special elections to make up for the Matt Gaetz and the Mike Waltz, them leaving Congress. So two more seats should come to the Republicans after this. These are heavily favored Republican districts. On the Wisconsin situation, Poly Market is one of the betting markets. Where do people think this is right now? 87% chance that the Democrat is going to win. It's technically a nonpartisan election, but she's a Democrat. And she's very, very open about that in every other part of her life, but not when she's running for office. So anyway, that's what the Wisconsin situation looks like. U.S. prosecutors are also looking to seek the death penalty for our United Healthcare CEO killer. I'm not giving you his name. And it's interesting because I thought about this before. I really have a problem with people giving out this guy's name. I don't like it. I think it's wrong. But it's not technically a violation of like my stated policy on this stuff. Like Blaze has this policy as well. We don't talk about mass shooters because they're looking for attention. They're trying to turn themselves into legends and heroes. And while he only killed one person, the United Healthcare CEO, his murderer, is absolutely doing the same thing. Wants the attention, wants the fame. He is being idolized by the left. They put a bill together in his name to honor him. This is a murderer of a father who's walking down the sidewalk on his way to work. A father, a husband, who's gunned down in the streets in cold blood. He's not going to get any hero worship here for sure. But also, I'm not even going to let you. I mean, you know his name probably, but I'm not publicizing it. Screw this guy. I hope he rots in jail until the second they pull the freaking switch on him. That's what I hope. Javier Milei, have a different feeling about. Really like him. He's done multiple experiments basically with the Argentinian economy. Good one to experiment on because it was in really bad shape. And he's doing these things that are kind of leaning libertarian. He describes himself as an anarcho-capitalist. He's done a lot of the things that, like, even conservatives here were like, I don't know if we can go that far. Rent control is a big one. Now, conservatives have fought against that for a long time, and it's really never worked anywhere it's been tried. Rent control is a catastrophe for anyone involved in it. Well, they had really bad examples of it in Argentina. Argentina's inflation he got rid of the rent control in Argentina, by the way. Argentina's inflation was reaching 211.4%, the highest in 32 years. Rent prices were adjusted every 12 months because of this law that was passed in 2020. Leases had to last at least 3 years. Imagine that. Imagine going to rent an apartment. They're like, well, you have to stay here for 3 years and we're going to adjust the price every year. You don't know what it's going to be. It ended up distorting real estate markets, of course. Milei's repeal of rent control laws took effect on December 29th. Since then, housing in Buenos Aires has jumped by 195.23%. You want to talk about an instant success story. Now apartments are everywhere. And of course, they're much, much more affordable. Back in a second. Okay, so here's what happened. A new road design has neighbors in Pennsylvania suburb calling for change. It's ridiculous. Well, what was the problem? The problem was people were speeding too much down this one particular road. And it was in a neighborhood with homes and everything else. And people didn't like that. So, sometimes you'll get speed bumps or stop. We had stop signs put in our neighborhood. I hate them. It's one of those things where, that stuff's going to happen. You know the way they handle it. Well, Montgomery Township decided to do something a little different and just painted the lines and the road in squiggly patterns. So you have to keep turning and going slower. Now, I don't understand how this would work. I frankly would just drive right down the middle of it if there was no cars coming and I would go straight. Or if a car was coming, I'd pull way over to the side on the right and just have the white line go squiggling in front of my car. They are going to put up posts there, it looks like, according to their Facebook post. They're going to put up posts there. I will say, probably still like it better than speed bumps or stop signs. But come on, who's going to follow? Like, who's going to do this? If anything, I'm going to wind up trying to set records of how fast I can go through the squiggly lines. Like, that's what America does. We don't fold your squiggly lines. We drive right through them, or we go around them as fast as possible.